Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
This is Matt Sorensen. I'm excited to be with you all today. Mark's going to be here in just a minute. Today, we're going to be talking about offshore planning strategies and the Panama Papers. The Panama Papers are, we're going to get into that, but this is there's been a leak of documents from some offshore planning and some famous people, heads of state, celebrities, on what they've been doing with offshore planning. It's created a huge buzz in the media, and we want to talk about that and also make some really important offshore planning strategies and comments so you guys all know what to really be looking out for when it comes to offshore planning. And this is a big topic. I mean, this is asset protection, tax planning, and avoiding scams. There's so many issues to consider here. We're going to dive into those as we go through the show today. Thanks for being with us. And we want to let you know, of course, you can always find prior versions of the Refresh Your Wealth show under refreshyourwealth.com or under the iTunes podcast under Refresh Your Wealth. If you're listening to us via iTunes, please reach out to us and give us a 5-star review there. It really helps others find the show and makes Mark and I feel good about ourselves for getting all this free information out. Mark's going to be joining us here in just a few moments. So I'm going to go ahead and get started off, though, with the show so we don't delay. And we're going to give some legal and tax tips as we do throughout the show. But before we do that, I want to give a little overview here of what the Panama Papers are, maybe intro the topic a little bit more, and then we'll give some tax and legal tips and get more in depth into the topic. All right, the Panama Papers, what they are is there is a group of journalists who obtained access to leaked documents from a law firm in Panama, so it's called the Panama Papers, called Mossack Fonseca. This is a Panama law firm that had offices throughout Europe. They even had some in the U.S. But this law firm really specialized in offshore planning, setting up corporations and other companies and entities in offshore locations. It wasn't just Panama. It was in, the Caribbean, the Bahamas, the British Virgin Islands. I mean, it was all over, really, in a lot of these offshore, quote-unquote, tax or asset protection havens. And they were very well known, been around for a really long time. And what happened is somebody got access to all of their client information and released that information out to a group of journalists. Now, I've been super interested in this because I want to see what people are doing, obviously. it's kind of our profession in some ways. So, but these Panama Papers are not available to the public. There is a group of journalists that have formed some consortium, and you can go to their website. It's OCCRP.org, Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, OCCRP.org. That is where the journalists have been putting together stories and disseminating information to other newspapers. So, but these reporters all have access to these documents. None of us do. Maybe it'll show up somewhere on the, in the web somewhere, but right now you can't actually see them yourself. Here's what we've learned from the Panama Papers so far and what the reporting has been. First, there are a lot of government officials and high net worth individuals who have used offshore planning in various forms. Now, I want to say this. Offshore planning can be legitimate. And most of what we do for our clients is in offshore planning is either setting up companies for foreign real estate purchases or some privacy purposes or asset protection. We'll talk about those purposes. And there's all some other purposes that sometimes are used that are still legitimate purposes. But what some of these people were doing is they were using some of these offshore entities to do illegal acts or to hide illegally funded money. And it's interesting because there's a lot of government officials in Europe, in the Middle East, in China, and it looks like a lot of kickback money for favors and things like that that's illegal. There's $2 billion in Vladimir Putin's childhood best friend under his name approximately. And this guy is a professional cello player in like the Russian Symphony. I don't know. I don't think the salary there is that great. But so there's a lot of odd stuff going on there. And I will say what we've learned from this law firm, Monsec Fonseca, is they really catered to European, Middle Eastern clients. A lot of U.S.-based clients typically use other forms or other law firms for these services. So there's not that many U.S. Persons in there. One of the popular names is Jackie Chan's in there, you know, the actor Jackie Chan. He's one that came up, although nothing, you know, unsavory of what he's done has been reported or anything illegal. So I want to run through some of the people that are in there, though, because this is just shocking to hear the type of people here. You have the president of Argentina, the king of Saudi Arabia, the president and emir of the United Emirates and Abu Dhabi, the president of Ukraine, the prime minister of Iceland, who has resigned. Let's see, prime minister of Georgia, prime minister of Iraq, prime minister of Italy, prime minister of Jordan, prime minister of Pakistan, prime minister of Qatar, prime minister of Ukraine, prime minister of Moldova. It was almost like this is like all these heads of state are all involved here. I mean, it goes from, you can go look this up, and there's some government official from like every country in here, which is really, really interesting, because these are government officials. I guess some of them have other business and investments, but so this is one of the things, and obviously the reporting is focusing on a lot of public corruption that's arising from this reporting that's happening, and that's a lot of the stories that have been coming out of the news is public corruption, kickback schemes, and things like that. Some of the other stories that have been coming out are tax avoidance structures. There are some people actually in prison in the United States for avoiding taxes that have had some reporting done, and there's even more unsavory stuff that's been found in some of these leaked documents that show some fake expensing. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of money moving around as fake business expenses, seeking to avoid U.S. income tax or hiding the income altogether by not having it declared anywhere in the U.S., thus keeping it out of U.S. taxation. So, and those are all, of course, illegitimate things I'm mentioning here. That's what the reporting's focused on. But what I think's happened is there's been this chill come out on offshore planning in general. And that's why Mark and I want to talk about this today is should you be looking to do offshore planning, and what are the legitimate things to be doing when it comes to offshore planning? What are the scams and stuff to avoid, and what's the illegal stuff? Like a lot of this stuff that's being reported here. So that's
and
what
Matt,
we'll talk about.
I want to say, can you hear me?
Today's show. Yes, Mark.
Matt, can
thank
you hear
you.
Me?
I can hear you.
I'm on the line. Woo!
Mark Kohler on the line. Well,
I know
been,
I had to cut you off.
I've been teeing off the topic. And I'm going to let you
there
chime
you
in, but I, you know, I haven't gotten too far on the topic. I've just explained the Panama Papers here. I know you had trouble hearing me there, but Mark, I know you and I both want to talk about. I know you want to talk about some of the tax, maybe privacy issues and offshore planning. We're going to talk about, you know, all, this topic all in general and how you should really use offshore planning.
Well, and I owe two apologies first to my amazing co-host Matt Sorensen that. For 10 minutes, he's in the dark. Matt and I are both trying to hold together some travel today and speaking at different conferences. After tax season, we get to go out on the road a little bit. And I want to apologize to our listeners, too, that I'm a little late. I heard, Matt, most of your introduction. I was just on hold trying to get through. And Jen, our studio producer, thanks for your patience getting me on the line. I just finished speaking today at a conference in Salt Lake City. So anyway, our Refresh Nation out there, this is going to be a great show. And Matt has really studied up on the Panama Papers, and I've got this Puerto Rico thing down. I'm excited to talk about it. So,
yeah, I'm excited to hear about Puerto Rico. I think after this show, we're all moving to Puerto Rico. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, there you go. Well, at least take a vacation, fair minimum.
Right, right. Well, at least, you know, put our toe in the water over there, so to speak.
Good stuff.
Well, I'm going to give a legal tip right now, and then we'll come back and do a tax tip with you, Mark. So let me fire away at my legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay, this is a legal tip that applies in a few different states in a couple ways, and it's essentially making one quick and easy strategy, which arises about what entity to set up. A lot of our clients who are starting a small business will start off and say, what entity do I set up? And our general rule of thumb, obviously, if it's an operational business selling goods or services, we say do an S corporation. If it's investments like real estate, we say do an LLC. But for many people just starting out that aren't going to have too much income, one strategy used in choosing the right entity is to start out with an LLC. It's easier to set up and maintain because you don't have to do a tax return automatically on it, which you do have to do with an S-Corp. And also, in a number of states, like Arizona, for example, there's no annual reporting for LLCs, whereas corporations have to do annual reporting to the state. So one of the strategies then is as that business grows and as you start having income and revenue, you can make it taxed as an S-Corp and make what's called an S-election to it. And so that S election essentially makes it's still an LLC with the state, and you still have an LLC. You're just taxed as an S corporation, which again is generally the taxation you want if you have an operational business selling goods and services. So we like to call it, you know, kind of grow into the S corporation or that S corporation tax status, but it might be good to start off as an LLC, depending on your situation and whether you're going to have a certain amount of income in your first year and maybe make an S election in the second year or later down the road as you have income to benefit from the tax savings of an S corporation.
Matt, that was a phenomenal tip. I love it. And you know what? It's funny is I'm standing here in this presentation room now that's empty, and I'm hearing just after this this little workshop I did, and on the whiteboard right in front of me is I just taught that principle. I was actually with a bunch of realtors and property managers, and many of them are like, I don't know if I'm going to make enough money this year to justify an S-Corp. That's cool. I said, set up an LLC. You can always convert to the S-Corp later. We'll just backdate it through the S-election. And they're like, oh, my gosh. So
yeah,
right here on the whiteboard, Matt. I'm just living the dream with you.
I mean, we're just spreading the wealth of knowledge, you know, wherever we go.
Yeah. I just love the radio show. I'm having fun today. I was so excited to have this show today. And all of you listeners out there, I had someone, Matt, I just want to say, even at my workshop today in Salt Lake, someone walked up and said, Mark, I'm an avid listener of your radio show. They were a Rich Dad Poor Dad coach. I mean, they're literally consulting people around the country. Like, dude, we listen to your show every week, and we get tips, and then we tell other people. I'm like, well, okay. But so,
make sure you're citing us. No.
Yeah, I'm like, send me a check. You know, what the heck? Anyway. Okay, well, I get the chance now to give you a tax tip for the week.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, now this tax tip, man, be patient with me, folks, because I'm going to just damn this, you know, square peg in a round hole right here. I'm going to make it a tax tip somehow. But this is an important tip, and it needs to be talked about today. And that is crowdfunding. Many of you don't know that this crowdfunding, Matt, I know you're going to be excited for this little tip because Matt Sorensen himself, he talked about this a lot last year. Matt's got some great articles on his website on this topic. And what happened was, back in October, there was the big final regs announced for crowdfunding. And they said, but we're going to wait for 6 months until they're effective. And folks, in May, they go effective in just 3 or 4 weeks. It's actually May 16th, they go effective. Mm-hmm. And then there's a 20 to 1 day cooling period on any offering. So about mid-June, you're going to see these first crowdfunding portals kicking out these big announcements on their new projects. So here's my tip. Folks, if you are thinking about taking your business to the next level, you want to raise money, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's got to be too hard, and I got all this SEC stuff to worry about, and I don't know how to raise money, and I'm going to have to call the lawyers and spend a lot of money, crowdfunding could be a great fit for you. And so just a couple quick tips. Go look at a crowdfunding portal. Their websites are very interactive. They're going to help you walk through the steps of getting your project ready to pitch. You can pitch it on your social media with a video on YouTube, and you can raise up to $1 million. And most people are going to be able to at least give $2,000 or more, but most people can give up to $2,000, including your grandma. And you can raise up to $1 million and offer a piece of equity in your company, a gift. You can ask for a donation. You can give them rewards, benefits from your company in exchange for this crowdfunding pitch. So anyway, the point is, folks, we're within weeks of you being able to do $1 million of capital raise for your business through a portal. And it can be very affordable. There are some steps, and we will be there for you, whether it's through the legal prep of your legal documents to do it or helping with the accounting aspect. We're here for you. But crowdfunding, Matt, huh? Did you remember? It's just a few weeks away.
Yeah. You know, I was just preparing my presentation for tomorrow. I'll be in Connecticut at the CCIM Institute or their chapter meeting there for the state, and I got a slide on it, and I totally looked up the date, and I'm cool that you're speaking about it too. So, you know, Mark and I were on the same page on this stuff. It's just S elections, crowdfunding, we're just, you know, we're on the same page. So,
when we go to restaurants, right, Mark, we usually order the same food. Yeah, I was going to say, when we go to restaurants, we usually order the same food. We share food. Sometimes we'll, like, take our fork and wrap it through each other's elbows and eat. You know, it's very intimate. No, I'm just joking. Okay, yeah. Anyway, Matt, go ahead. What do you, we got our question of the week from last week, right? We got to knock that out?
Yeah, so I did not get an answer on the question of the week. I don't know if you want to carry that over or if you got an answer. At least I have a correct
did,
answer.
Actually. Well, yeah, some people
right.
email you, Matt. Some email me. I did get a response. This was Joe out of Long Beach, a regular listener and client of ours. Now, let me remind everybody what the question was last week. Joe won a copy of our books, a copy of one of our books. He gets to choose. And so here in a moment, Matt is going to pose the question for this week. But I get to give you the answer from last week's question. This is an opportunity to get your juices flowing and to win one of our books. So the question last week was, Mark, I need to go out and do real estate. I want to set up a Series LLC. And if I set up the Series LLC and I put my property in it, but then I go over to another state that doesn't have a Series LLC statute and I start buying property over in this other state, do I still get Series LLC protection? I mean, I filed the law for this. Why can't I just go into California and use my Series LLC there? Well, the opinion out there amongst the Bar Association and the lawyers across the country is that you will not get the respect of that Series LLC if you try to use it in a state that does not have a Series LLC statute. Now, you can make a constitutional argument that you should have that continuity from state to state, and the other state should recognize the laws of another state. There's constitutional principles, but that's a big case, and I don't know if you'd want to spend the money to do that. I'll go argue in front of the Supreme Court for you if you want, but here's the point. When you do Series LLCs, which is a great way to protect your rental properties and put rentals in different buckets, they only work in about 12 states. There's only 12 states right now that have a Series LLC statute. If you try to go to another state that doesn't have that law, we would caution you that your eggs are going to be treated as if they were all in one basket, and you may want to set up an LLC specific for that state. There you go, Matt. Joe was the winner. That was the question of the week. Boom, bada bang.
All right. Okay. Well, I mean, you kind of went the legal question of the week last week. I'm going to give a tax-related question of the week for today. And here's the question. And this is, you get, it's kind of like A or B. This is, I'm going to make it simple here. For someone who has $100,000 of self-employment income, can they contribute more money to a SEP IRA or a solo 401k? If I have $100,000 of self-employment income, can I put more money into a SEP IRA or a solo 401k?
Ooh,
email Mark or Matt.
I like that question. Where do I send my answer? I want to win that one.
That's M-A-T or M-A-R-K at kickuslawyers.com. And as Mark said earlier, you know, the winner gets a free copy of Minor Mark's book. We ship it out to you. We sign it. It makes, you know, it looks great on the bookshelf. When your friends come by, they'll be like, oh, you read that book? You know, it's kind of like a rite of passage. It's really like, I mean, it's a nice notch to have on the belt.
Yep, I love it. Well, and you can email your answer in, or in all due respect to the Car Talk brothers, we will accept a mail-in answer. So if you want to write your answer on a $20 bill, you can send that to our offices on our website, and we will accept any sort of answer written on currency if you want to participate via mail. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. And if that's a Harriet Tubman 20, all the better.
I saw that in the news. The debate. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Good one, Matt. Matt, see, you're getting funnier on the show, you know?
Well,
you know, all that feedback from listeners that said Matt's not funny, they're not. It's not true. It's not true.
Yeah, I know. I know. Uninformed.
They're uninformed.
All right. Well,
all right. We're into the topic for the show, right? Okay. Right.
Yeah, I'm ready to just dig into this because I got a plane to catch.
Panama Papers. You go first. Panama Papers. I want to hear all about Panama. You've done the research on this, so. I'm just clay in your hands here. Tell me what the deal is.
All right. So I kind of laid this out as you were having technical difficulties getting on, Mark. So so in basic, just to kind of reset the stage here of what the Panama Papers were and who's involved was the law firm Monsec Fonseca. I have no idea if I'm saying that right. I tried to use my most, you know, Panamanian accent I could. But they were a law firm specializing in setting up offshore entities for high net worth individuals. And what was discovered is a lot of government officials, heads of states, there's like five presidents of, you know, European countries or Middle Eastern countries, kings, you know, celebrity football players, a lot of the European celebrities, like we call it soccer, they call it football. But Messi, what's his name? Messi, the soccer player, he was involved. On the U.S. side, like I said, there wasn't not that many U.S. people involved. Jackie Chan was somebody, you know, the actor Jackie Chan. And there's been some people who have actually been prosecuted already before for tax evasion or other fraud that have had accounts linked to this law firm. So this is a leak. There's literally about 20 to 30 years of records of this law firm that got leaked. And I want to give the website, too, where you can go. It's OCCRP.org. This is the website of the journalists who have been putting together stories on this. It's the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. It's a number of newspapers that came together to get this information out and create stories. They are the holders of all these Panama Papers. They had some source that leaked it to them. And so we can actually see
now,
the
Matt,
Panama Papers.
Can I ask you a question? I want to ask you a question. Is that okay? I want to throw out a question here. So,
yeah.
I mean, this is, it sounds all very salacious, you know, that these people, big money, and they're hiding their money, and this law firm got hacked, and we find all this stuff out. So there's obviously some privacy issues here. It's sad, you know, that these people expected privacy and some bozo that hacked this law firm. I mean, that would be so, I mean, I want all of you that are use our law firm to know we've got this quadruple encrypted offshore, not offshore, offsite for our data for, and we try to do our best, but it's just sad that they got hacked. There's a privacy issue.
Mm-hmm.
But what are your thoughts? I mean, is there really a ramification from a tax standpoint? Let me ask that first. I mean, is this all of a sudden the IRS is like zooming in on this? What are the tax ramifications from this? Are there any? What are you seeing?
Yeah, great question. Okay, so President Obama has spoke on it and has basically made some comments that that the world's richest people basically go down there to hide their money. And it goes on the middle class to make up the tax revenue. Now, one thing that's important that came out of the Panama Papers is, and even just in general, there's a lot of legitimate stuff, which we're going to talk about, legitimate things to do offshore. But there are people who use it illegitimately. It's kind of like a tool, you know. You can use a tool for good. You can use a tool for bad. And some people are using it to really hide income and money and avoid U.S. taxation. That's certainly clear. That does happen. Let's not pretend like it doesn't. I think that's the minority of the situation, but that does happen. And the U.S. attorney for Manhattan, you know, the Southern District of New York, has launched an investigation into a lot of high net worth individuals whose names were in there from the U.S. or their U.S. citizens to try and get access to the Panama Papers. I mean, the government doesn't even have access to this stuff. It's funny, there's even a letter that this U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, this is a very powerful lawyer, law enforcement official, had to write a letter to request access to these Panama papers that these reporters have. So, but they're definitely looking into it, and it's, you know, it's created a political buzz and, you know, rich against poor, things like that, that are that's coming out of this story. So, but I think one thing that's happened that I've seen from a lot of people who look to do legitimate stuff offshore is it's caused them a little bit of caution and concern because one of the most legitimate things to do in offshore planning is privacy. That's one of the most legitimate things to do, which is get your money, put it in a private place where, you know, whether it's government control or other people or future potential lawsuits. I mean, you want to have privacy on where your money and assets are, and that obviously is something that's, at least for this law firm, you know, been not realized for sure. So,
no, Matt, can I interject here? I like what you just said there about the privacy issue because, yeah, if there anybody's name pops up on that list and you haven't declared all of your worldwide income, which we'll talk about here in regards to Puerto Rico shortly too, they're going to have problems with the IRS. Fair enough. But the privacy. It's not too that I want to make – this is my opinion for what it's worth. I want to say this to all of our listeners is that it's not that because this was leaked, someone's going to lose their assets. Asset protection is about using structures and making sure that it's harder for a creditor to get at your assets. Now, part of asset protection, part of it, folks, let me repeat this. This is a chapter in my book, is that privacy can enhance – asset protection, because you make it harder for a creditor to find it, then it's harder for them to get it. But once they find it, then they can at least hone in on their lawsuit and be a little more targeted. So I think, if anything, this privacy disclosure for these people, any of those people that are in a lawsuit right now, the creditors are rubbing their hands together because they can go, okay, now we know where some things are at, so we can be more targeted in our lawsuit. But the privacy is and privacy is not asset protection. Privacy enhances asset protection. Matt, do you agree? Thoughts?
I love that. Yeah, dude, nice comment there. I think I totally love that. I love how you tied in privacy to asset protection. It is an asset protection in and of itself, but.
Matt, what are some legitimate things people can do? I know you were going to talk about that. Yeah, like what can people really do? It's not crazy.
So as we just talked about, the first one was privacy. And generally that's obtained by establishing what's called an IBC. So when people talk about an offshore company, you know, or something like that. Usually what they're referring to is what's called an IBC. It's an international business company. Now, most of the companies in the Bahamas or the, you know, the Caribbean or in some of these offshore countries, Panama, you know, for example, they will have what's called an IBC. Kind of like in the U.S. we'll have an LLC, you know. They just call it an IBC, and all these companies have a act that's that essentially is a no-tax entity. It's exempt from taxation, and foreigners can own these entities. Now, the first one we talked about was privacy. That's one reason you may use one of these IBCs, or you could even do something like an LLC that some of these foreign countries have, like Nevis or something. We set those up for clients. But the second one, which is one I just helped a client with last week, is owning real estate in a foreign country. For example, in Belize, if you're a foreigner, you cannot own real estate directly, but you can own a company that owns real estate in that country. And so any foreigner that wants to buy real estate in a lot of these countries that are kind of in this, you know, Caribbean, Bahamas, and a lot of offshore places, I shouldn't even say offshore, in a lot of foreign places, even Mexico. If you want to buy real estate in Mexico, you have to set up a trust through a bank. And so so some of these entities are required just to own foreign real estate. That would be the second legitimate purpose.
I like it. Well, let me add a third, and I think I can use our last term presidential candidate that did not pull it off, Mitt Romney. He got a lot of slack, you know, even though he's just a millionaire, not a billionaire like our newest candidate. But Mitt Romney, he took a lot of flack because he was a millionaire, one of the richest people to run before him. Before him, he was the richest. When he ran for office, he got flack because he had assets offshore. And he said, hey, I'm not dodging the IRS. I'm going to have entities offshore or trusts, and these are called foreign COPES, foreign charging order protection entities. Nevis Island is a good example, like Matt said. But there's these special trusts offshore as well that are irrevocable trusts in islands like Greece and things like that, where you can set up these trusts, and it makes it harder for someone that wants to file a lawsuit to get at your assets. And these could be liquid assets. So as Matt brings up strategy two, real estate, you may want to take some of your stock holdings or company ownership and put it in these offshore entities or offshore trusts. But on your tax return, you're still disclosing your assets and your income, and you're not hiding from the IRS, but it's extremely private. And so it's a barrier. It's a barrier for a creditor, and that's legit. And you can spend from $2,000 to $5,000 or $50,000 to $100,000 on some of this stuff, and you've got to really get second opinions and shop around because there's a lot of scam artists out there that will really take advantage of you in regards to cost. So it can be expensive, but it doesn't have to be if you go with a legitimate strategy.
Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit last week about the FBAR, which is if you have $10,000, or excuse me, over $10,000.
Hold it. That's not to be confused with the F bomb. You're talking about the F bar. Because I mean, this is
I'm talking about the F bar.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to make sure.
Yeah. The F bar. Neither are really fun things to drop. But the F bar is what you send to the IRS when you have over $10,000 in an account outside the U.S. And you won't need to be careful about that too. And I think there's two really main components of this when you start having assets in an offshore company. The first is there's two things you have to worry about: disclosure and paying tax. The first part is there's a lot of stuff that the IRS has that says, we just want to know what you have. It's not about whether you're making income on it, but if it's offshore stuff, you got bank accounts or companies offshore with assets like cash, we want to know. And you got to report those assets to us on your U.S. tax return. Whether there's income or not, it's just a disclosure obligation. The second part of this is you have a obligation to pay tax on the income. So if I'm making money, let's say in the Bahamas, and but I live in the U.S. or I'm a U.S. citizen, I still have to pay U.S. income tax on that. Just because I have a company in some offshore location generating the income, I may not have tax in that country because they don't have income tax, but I'm still subject to tax in the U.S. on that income.
Well, and Matt, I loved – this is a perfect transition from the Panama Papers. Not that we may come back to this, this asset protection aspect and what the Panama Papers are doing with this chilling effect. But I like, Matt, that was a perfect transition when you bring up worldwide income. So can we bring Puerto Rico into play here, Matt? What do you think?
I love it. I was trying to tee it up for you. I was trying to pass the baton.
That was awesome. Okay. All right. Well, here's what the story is, folks. This will blow your mind, and I want to have some fun with this. I want to reiterate what Matt just said. As a U.S. citizen, if you want to carry a U.S. passport, you are going to be taxed on your worldwide income, your intergalactic income. Even if Matt Damon would have made money on Mars, he would have paid taxes on it because he's a U.S. citizen. There's only one spot in the world, in this universe, that you can go where the U.S. government is not going to tax you, and that is Puerto Rico. Isn't that crazy? It's like the Twilight Zone of locations to avoid. Now, I think, okay, so let's set a little
political
stage.
But this is new, right? I mean, this is a new thing.
Well, yeah, since 2012. So it's been in the last three to 4 years. It's been gaining momentum. What happened? Some of you may go, why in the heck did Congress make this deal? Well, some of you that may not know, Puerto Rico, as much like Samoa, these are kind of the redheaded stepchildren of the United States. Are they states? Are they not? They're these territories. What are they? And so the U.S. has got some sort of responsibility to them. And basically back in 2006, the U.S. passed some Congress passed some laws that really inhibited some of the companies that were down there doing pharmaceutical research and pharmaceutical development. And it gutted the economy of Puerto Rico. I mean, Congress just decimated the economy in Puerto Rico in 2006 with this legislation because pharmaceutical companies were getting some special treatment down there, and they were employing thousands of Puerto Ricans. Well, with the backlash of that, Congress swung the pendulum in the other direction, and in 2012, they passed Act 20 and 22. And these two acts basically said, you know what? Let's try to revitalize the economy down in Puerto Rico, and we're going to exempt all Puerto Ricans from any U.S. tax. And then there's these two acts that were passed, this Act 20 and Act 22, and Congress went with it, that special treatment for taxes are going to be even granted to companies that do business in Puerto Rico because they're trying to revitalize the economy. Isn't it funny how these tax issues – always have some more political aspect. So anyway, Act 20, and I'm going to summarize this, Matt, and I know you had a couple questions of me, is Act 20 is for businesses. And in general, if a company goes down to Puerto Rico, it can have max 5% tax rate. There's exemptions for the first 5 years from even property tax. And then there's no tax on profits once you get there and earn it if you're as it flows through into Act 22. If you're a Puerto Rican resident. So if you're an owner of that company and living in Puerto Rico, it even gets better. Now, I'm just hitting the highlights here, but Act 22 is this incentive for businesses to go there. Act 22 is an incentive if an individual lives in Puerto Rico. And I think this Congress didn't expect this because they just said, okay, Puerto Rican residents aren't taxed. And then the billionaire said, hold it. How do I become a Puerto Rican resident? Oh, I have to live there 183 days? I'm in. So,
Pardon? They have beaches there, right?
They do. And see, this is one of the most difficult decisions once you move there is, do I go to the pool or do I go to the beach? You know, it's tough. You know, what do you do?
I know.
These third world problems.
So. Yeah. Well, I've had clients over the years talk to me about it, and I've always been like, I don't know anything about that. And God, I'm just glad I listened to your show, Mark, so I can talk about this stuff. Because in some ways, at first, I was like, man, this sounds like a scam. It doesn't sound right. And then after a while, it's like I hear about it more and more. I saw some, professional articles about it, and I just haven't gotten into the detail on it. So now, do you think that's going to – I mean, how long does this last? If you really go stake it out and you're an individual and you go down to Puerto Rico, you're a high-income person, I mean, you're saving tons in taxes. What's the, I mean, is this,
well,
when's
well,
it
no,
going to
Matt,
change?
That's a great question.
Is it going to die soon? Is Congress going to change it sooner than later?
Well, and Matt, as you know, with most tax laws, there a lot of, if there's any changes, they're going to grandfather those that have already relied on the current law. So for those that are making these transitions now, a lot of these companies are signing 5, 10, and 20-year contracts with the Puerto Rican government. They're relying on laws that if there's a change, they're going to be grandfathered in. So if you ever heard the term act now, get in on this. If the laws do change, again, you're going to be fine if you can get in before the door closes. Now, there isn't major legislation of any sort being proposed to stop this right now. This is a good thing for Puerto Rico. If you look at the economic aspect of this, Puerto Rico is going through a complete revitalization, which it needs. The crime rate in Puerto Rico is 4 times that of New York City, and they're trying to get a handle and say money can help resolve this as these bigger companies are going down there and saying, hey, we got to clean this mess up. And some people say, well, Mark, you're trading one crime rate for another because some may say it's a crime the taxes we're paying here. I mean, let's put some numbers to this. Now, right now, the tax on interest, for those of you, and I'll give a couple examples of who this might be a perfect candidate to make this move. And I've had 2 clients in the last 6 months make this move, literally do it. But let's run some numbers here. Your tax on dividends now, by the time you add Obamacare at 3.8%, I'll even say capital gain rate. Let's just go with capital gain rate. The 20% federal rate, you've got your state rate, and then you've got your net investment income tax rate on top of that, which is Obamacare. You can have as upwards of a 30% capital gain rate or more when you sell a piece of property or stock in a company, if you've been building up value in a company. If you move down to Puerto Rico and you hold that real estate or stock, any new gains you create are tax-free. But you have a 10-year hold on certain capital gains that are already created. You have to wait 10 years before you cash in, and then it's zero tax rate. That's a big number. Also, let's think about interest or ordinary income. Right now, I have clients in California that are pushing over 52% tax rate. By the time you do federal and state, and again, the Medicare tax through Obamacare, you can be over 52%. Maybe that poolside villa in Puerto Rico looks a little more attractive when the interest tax rate in Puerto Rico, starting tomorrow, if you make your residency, zero. Whoa. Okay. We're talking. Now, there's different pieces and parts to it, and which tax rates and did you earn the money in Puerto Rico versus a U.S.-based company? And it's a perfect fit for certain people. And Matt, is this okay? I throw out an example of I think a typical client. Matt and I have a lot of clients that are not tied to a specific area. They are not doing real estate in a little town, or they have a brick-and-mortar business. They're internet marketers. And we've got a lot of clients that are doing Amazon reselling, internet marketing, affiliate marketing, and maybe even some outbound calling, some sales calling. When you can move your operations literally to Puerto Rico tomorrow, and the clients that I've had move are single, they don't have kids yet, they're still out there, they're building their career. They're like, you know what? It's not too hard for me to move down to Puerto Rico, establish residency. Maybe I'll live there 5 or 10 years and just live the life down there and shave off 50% of my tax rate. Wow. So that could be a good fit for some of you listening to the show.
Yeah. Well, that's the play right now. That's the offshore legitimate tax-saving strategy right now. So love that. Can work for some people. Well, I guess that's kind of the rub, Mark, is making sure that you can pull your income easily over there and get it out of kind of a U.S.-based, but continental U.S. Well, that doesn't work either. You know what I mean? You got to have it originating out of Puerto Rico, it sounds like.
Yes, but that's if you're doing business. Now, see, you've got different people that are maybe in their retirement phase of their life. They're not generating new money, but they've got a nest egg. And by moving that nest egg to Puerto Rico, you're seeing this dramatic savings. And see, let me put another
example. Mark, let me throw out a strategy.
Okay.
What if I had $1 million in a traditional retirement account or 401k, and
ooh,
I am over 59 and a half, and I want to, and I go to Puerto Rico, establish residency, can I distribute that whole account now? It'll come into taxable income to me, but I'll be in Puerto Rico. Would I be able to, what do you think? Could I avoid the tax on that, get the whole thing distributed?
You know, Matt, I'm embarrassed. I think it's safer, since this is a national show. And I tell you, I don't know about retirement and plan payouts. Now, we tried. I want to let our listeners know. We were trying to try. There's a CPA firm in Puerto Rico that does Act 20 and Act 22 strategies. We tried to get them to come on the show today, and they had something going on. They're the CPA firm that we like over there. We would have been able to get a straight answer on that question. I am sorry, Matt, but I don't know about retirement plan income. Interest, dividends, business income, capital gain, and business income generated through business operations in Puerto Rico, that's where we're seeing the major savings. I don't know about the retirement income. But you opened the door to one of my points I wanted to make. For any of you that are interested in this, there's actually quite a bit of reading material, some great resources with companies that are CPA and law firms practicing in Puerto Rico. I would shop around regarding pricing for the consulting and support you need. I had one client that I couldn't believe what he was paying to get this advice. Another client that was paying about some reasonable fees to get support. So don't go with the first company you hear just because they say that we're the only one. Shop around. We'd love to be a support and help you in the process. And get you with the right firm. But if, you know, your personal lifestyle allows, maybe a sabbatical could be in store. Look at how our show could change someone's life in such a way. You know, we could be responsible for someone. I mean, okay, I'm going to throw this out too. I was the other day watching the show All the President's Men. I know you're a political junkie, Matt, so you're a fan of that movie.
Oh, yeah. Dustin Hoffman, Robert Redford, right?
Yep. And the whole Watergate scandal. Great movie. If any of you haven't watched it,
The Pentagon Papers, not the Panama Papers, though. Just want to make sure we all get that.
Yeah, good
the
stuff.
Double P's.
Well, you know, I was just watching that show, and it's so awesome. But I was just loving how they had to actually run to a real phone, make a call on a payphone, and
yeah.
Listen to an answering machine, and you know, and this is an important point. I'm not trying to be a cheeseball here on the show. Wouldn't it be nice to unplug a little bit, you know, and just get away from this culture we're in right now of immediacy and pressure and pop culture and a cell phone hooked to my ear and I've got to be connected every minute of the day. And there's a client of ours, Matt, you know him. Maybe I had to come on the show. He got rid of his cell phone 2 years ago, and they went to Costa Rica for a couple years and did some business and some video and business development. And I was like, how did you do that? And he goes, dude, it was so refreshing. And I don't know. I think we sometimes are very egocentric in the U.S. that it's our way or the highway, and maybe a change to save some taxes, it's not a bad idea.
Man, they got to get you on a commercial down there in Puerto Rico.
Well, I would wear quite a sexy swimsuit. Maybe I could do something on the beach, maybe kind of where I'm laying on the beach and the water kind of splashes up on me, and I could turn to the camera and go, this is your chance to unplug. Come down and save taxes. You know, maybe? No, maybe not.
So I wouldn't go that angle. Stick to the tax savings. Stick to what you're good at. All right. Well, I just want to make one final comment on this offshore planning and Panama Papers, and that is there are scams out there. Despite the things you can legitimately do that we've talked about, the privacy, the forward-looking asset protection, there are actually some unique tax planning strategies, as Mark talked about with Puerto Rico. There's some cool tax planning strategies to avoid UBIT tax that I'm going to talk about at my self-directed IRA summit. Using foreign corporations. There is the foreign real estate purchase. Sometimes it's required to have offshore entities to do that. There's a lot of legitimate things. Then there's the illegitimate things that are being highlighted by the Panama Papers. You know, you can't just hide income there. You don't declare. You can't receive your kickbacks over there and try and hide it from government officials or, you know, really from anyone. But there's another category that we haven't talked about, and I just want to close with, which is scams. Because it seeks out people that have money that would look to do this, there are a lot of people who try to take advantage of that. And they will set up scams and promise the world and tell you, oh, put all your money here. You never have to report it to the IRS. And they'll tell you it's legal, and they'll tell you that they've figured it out. And they'll sell you something that sounds really great, but in reality, there's not a lot of substance to it, and you're probably going to get yourself into penalties and possibly criminal issues with the IRS. So be careful about those scams. If something sounds too good to be true, seek out a professional that you trust, someone with an actual license, not some guru with a website selling you some crazy strategy that, you know, it might get you in hot water.
Matt, great points. You rock. You're the man. I love it. So, well, man, this has been another amazing Refresher Wealth show, trying to talk about the complex topic of Panama Papers, Puerto Rico. It's good stuff. Lots of good stuff. So,
yep, and we will be back next week. So thanks for listening today. Hopefully you learned something. Maybe we'll see you in Puerto Rico next. And
I'll be filming my commercial. Yeah, I'll be filming my commercial on the, you know, North Beach of Puerto Rico. Come on out. It's going to be good.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us, everybody.
Yeah, thanks so much. See you next week. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.